evening. My name is John. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
My sobriety date is April 21st, 2009. And my home group, as you know, is Friends of Bill W. that meets on Thursdays at 12 and 7 o'clock at Westminster Reformed Presbyterian Church. So come out and see us sometimes. I was going to say, if I knew Steve wasn't going to be here, I would have dressed down a little bit. He always emphasizes coat and tie, so that's why I'm wearing one. Also, I appreciate you guys having me here to speak, and David for giving me a ride. For this prideful alcoholic, asking for a ride is something I don't particularly like to do. But the longer I've been here, the more accustomed to it I am. I've become... I was born and raised in Portsmouth, Virginia, and oldest of three children. My father was an alcoholic. He got sober and stayed sober for 8 years. I was telling David on the way over here. Life got good, and he stopped going to meetings. His sponsor died. He never got a new sponsor, and he died an alcoholic death when I was 30 years old. He was 52. I was hoping my throat would be a little bit better. Shortly after coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was diagnosed with throat cancer, so that I've had trouble with my constant bronchitis. So at least you got a microphone so I can get up close to it and I'll croak and hopefully you can hear me. What is like, what happened, and what is like now? Like a lot of alcoholics, I started drinking when I was about 15. About started drinking, that's when I had my first taste. And I liked it right from the very beginning. At that time, my father was sober, so there was no alcohol in the house. I was telling David they were the most boring people in my life. I thought I couldn't imagine how they lived so boring. And I also, after having that beer, as time went on, I didn't get to drink a whole lot, but I certainly liked the effects of it. And anytime I could get my hands on it, I got it, and I loved to drink it. But I just didn't understand why my father couldn't drink like I was drinking it as a 15-year-old, you know, because it was all fun. It was laughter and a lot of good times. I was on the way, but I was before I got here, I was thinking about, you know, I thought I had a pretty normal childhood. But in looking back at it, maybe it wasn't that normal. At 15, I got busted for what they called joyriding at that time. We'd get a neighborhood, somebody's neighbor's car, and drive it around, go to the teen dance and stuff. Anyway, I got caught for that. And at 16, two friends of myself went out and bought a case of beer and drank the whole thing, and my friend ran into a house on Portsmouth Boulevard. So that was a big kerfuffle over that. And so I stayed on restriction quite a bit and didn't do too well in school. And at 17, I got my girlfriend pregnant. So at 18, I was married. And by the time I was 20, I was divorced, had a son, and just kept on going through life. At the time, like I say, everything seemed normal. Obviously, my perception was a little bit distorted, which it can still be today. After that, I just had a series of girlfriends. Always had a job, made money. Went through an apprenticeship program, all that, did well, but I was always restless and discontent. So I stayed, that was the longest I ever had a job, was at the shipyard for 6 years. And then I got another job and another job. And then I started working for myself. And all during this time, my drinking is continually getting more and more involved in my life. Pretty soon, that was all I did. Was pretty much, you asked me what I did for recreation, I drank. And everything I did involved alcohol. I don't think that's too different from any other alcoholic. Then what happened, like I say, I made it without too many consequences. Never had a DUI. Never lost a job because of drinking. Of course, if you're self-employed, you don't have to worry about losing a job. But my life, I knew all along that my alcoholism was getting worse and worse. As I say, I knew by the time I was 30 I was an alcoholic because I just liked to drink too much. And but being a prideful, self-centered alcoholic, I was going to handle everything by myself. I wasn't going to ask for any help. And it's just like we read from chapter 3 there, I tried all kinds of methods to quit. I was always quitting. I had no problem quitting. I just could not stay quit. And this went on until I was in my, I guess, mid-50s or so, when I had a real good experience. I quit for 11 months, and I was really proud of myself. I felt so much better physically, felt better mentally, but I was miserable. My wife said I was the most boring person she'd ever been around when I was sober. And I understand that, because I was trying to hang with people that were drinking, and I was drinking water. And that doesn't make for a lot of good times, because I was convinced that everybody was having more fun than I was having. But I knew my, like I say, I was trying to quit. I wanted to quit. So that was, then at the end of that 11 months, maybe I was getting too cocky, like it says in our literature. And I thought, this isn't too big a deal. I had no problem not drinking. So on Valentine's Day, I took my wife to Smithfield Inn. And we had a room, and we had a nice romantic dinner and all that stuff. And my buddy and his wife showed up, and he went up to the bar and ordered a wild turkey, and I said, I'll have one, with no intention of getting drunk, because I'd been sober for, or I'd been dry for 11 months, and I didn't think one could possibly hurt. Well, they ended up, I don't remember the end of the night, but I remember I got carried to the room because I couldn't walk. I was trying to make up for that 11 months. And so that was the most success that I had for quitting drinking for the next 10 years. And then for some reason I'd gone to the Chuckatuck Oyster Roast, and of course I had to take, you know, you can get all the beer you want, that's part of the ticket. Of course I had to have a pint of Jose Cuervo, because they might run out of beer, you never know. And I got pretty loaded. Got a few of my friends came on with me, and I don't remember much of what happened, but I was told I was on the floor asleep, and my wife was irritated, so she called the Isle of Wight Sheriff's Department and told them I had OD'd on marijuana. And, so I'm sitting there in my chair, and I kind of notice that I'm out in the country. I lived out on Lake Burnt Mills on 5 acres and right on the lake. So it's real dark out there. And I notice there's all these lights going, and I was like, what is that? And the sheriff comes rolling in the door, and the EMS and all that other stuff. And so they asked me if they could check my vitals and all that. And naturally, I was, by that time, I just woke up out of the blackout, and so I was feeling pretty good. And so then my sheriff puts my little box, my goodie box, in front of me and says, is this yours? And it was full of marijuana, and I said, no, I don't know who that is. Anyway, I got a just a possession charge. So that wasn't a big deal. Nothing a good lawyer couldn't straighten out. But over the next 5 days, I started stewing, man. I was getting hot. The more I thought about it, how dare she call the police? I've got a nice home here for her. I've got everything that should make her happy. How dare her call the police on me? So I started her, giving her, you know, giving her hell. And because I was pretty loaded then. And anyway, she called the police again. So they took me down and booked me and all that. And on the way back, I had the thought, if I hadn't been drinking, none of this would have happened. So make a long story short, that all got straightened out. Like I say, I got a lawyer and two misdemeanors, and they got no process if I was a good boy. But the whole thing was very, I'd always said if I got a DUI, if something major happened, I would do something about my drinking. Now that shows insanity right there. Why would you have to wait until you get into a lot of legal mess to get sober? So as a result of that, I started having to have an appointment with my doctor, just for routine doctor's appointment checkup. And I told him I was drinking too much and I'd like to get some help. Did he know where I could get into a treatment program? And first thing he said to me was, go to AA. They have the best results. Of course, I said, no, I need something special here because I'm unique and I need something. That, and I truly felt I needed to be locked up somewhere where I could not drink for a period of time so I could get that out of my system. Well, I think God had a different plan for me. Turns out they wouldn't take my insurance for any of these treatment programs or residential treatment programs that my doctor had suggested. So I ended up going to Maryview Hospital to a program called Turning Point, which was a six-week outpatient. They call them IOPs, intensive outpatient programs. And first, when the woman was, I guess, screening me, whatever, to see if I qualified. I don't know what the thing was about. But anyway, she asked me a lot of questions. And she asked me, you know, what I'd been doing and stuff. And I told her, and she said, oh, you're one of those old hippies, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I guess I am. But and she asked me about when I last time I'd had something to drink or smoke or whatever. And I told her, she said something about, well, you know, with this program, you have to quit everything. So when's the last? So that's my sobriety date, is when we figured out the last time I'd smoked some pot. So anyway, because I had money invested in this, it cost me $25 a session. I made up my mind I was going to do everything I could to get through with this thing. And she also asked me, do you believe in God? And I said, no. And she said, why not? And I gave all those reasons that's in the literature, you know, about man killing man in the name of God, all that. And she said, well, that's... has nothing to do with it. That's man doing harm to man. That's not God doing that. Well, I just shrugged because I didn't, what the hell does that make any difference? But I've soon found out because turns out I had to go to 4 meetings a week, AA meetings, which is the thing I didn't think would work for me. I had to get a sponsor and I had to get a home group. Like I say, I truly believe that God was working in my life. Because without that, if I'd have just walked into an AA meeting, I think I would have definitely put off the idea of asking somebody else to help me get sober, to help me do anything. I was self-reliant. I didn't need anybody. If I could just stop drinking, everything would be wonderful. Anyway, I got a sponsor. And I started attending meetings, and the sponsor, David and I were talking about this on the way over. I truly believe that God puts those people in your life. He had never gone through the steps with anybody. He had about 20 different sponsees, but he worked there at Maryview Hospital, so people would ask him to sponsor them so they could get through the program. It turned out that we went through the whole thing, all 12 steps. We met once a week, like most of you, I'm sure, do with your sponsor. And through that process, my life started changing. I started noticing a big difference in my reaction to life. One of the biggest changes, I really struggled with this God idea. And I just couldn't see what God had to do with me getting sober. But like I say, I desperately wanted to get sober. I had that gift of desperation they talk about. Because I truly felt that if I didn't get sober, I was going to die an alcoholic death, just like my father. I truly felt that. Because I was 63 years old, and I felt that this was the last hurrah, get sober or die an alcoholic death. So when I used to tell Don all the time, you know, we'd talk about God a little bit, and I'd say, Don, I truly wish I could believe in something, but I just cannot bring myself to believe in God. And he said, that's okay. Do you believe that I believe? And I said, yeah, I definitely believe you believe. And I thought to myself, I think you believe a little bit too much. But anyway, he made an impact on me. So I was really struggling because, like I say, I was starting to, we'd kind of gone through step two, you know, believe the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I thought, well, AA, my home group, that's what's doing it. That's my higher power. Because I can tell that these people are all sober and they seem to be happy. And at this time, like I say, in hindsight, it was a very short period. But at the time, it seemed like it was taking forever. And I truly wanted to believe in something. And I happened to be standing out by my chicken coop, watching chickens, because I don't know, I spent a lot of time doing that. And because I'd read that chapter, We Agnostics, I don't know, I must have read it a dozen times. Intellectually, I could understand it. Emotionally, I just couldn't buy into it. But I was standing there, and I had that thought, God either is or he isn't. And if I was so damn smart, why am I going to AA meetings? And I decided that I'm going to go with the God idea. And I had a lot of other thoughts, too, that they were all right there in the We Agnostics, but they seemed like my thoughts at the time, because I'd read it so many times. But it's amazing. I felt the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders because I'd finally made a decision. And I went in the house and I called Don immediately and I said, Don, I'm ready to do the third step. I'm ready to turn my life and will over the care of God as I understand it. And he was very excited because I don't think he thought I was going to get it either. But it's so amazing because in hindsight, the rear view mirror, as they say, is so much easier to see all this stuff. But at the time, it was a struggle. But I truly believe it was just my ego. I was could not admit that maybe I'd been wrong for the last 40 years. Because I'd pretty much turned my back on God when I got a divorce from my wife. I was heartbroken and all that, and didn't think I could live without her. And that's when I really took off on the drinking. That's when I took it serious. It wasn't just getting together with the boys. It was drinking every chance I got. And pretty much drinking every night. And trying to drink my heartache away, I guess. And so I turned my back because I had prayed to God to make her come back in my life. Make her love me again. And like I say, in hindsight, that was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I was very immature. I take my clothes off and drop them on the floor, and she was supposed to pick them up and wash them. And all I was supposed to do is go home and go to work, bring home the bacon. She was supposed to fry it. That was my whole attitude about it. And she didn't particularly like that. So I learned how to cook. After I got a divorce, I learned how to do a lot of things that I had no idea how to do. I'd gone right from my mother washing my clothes to my wife washing my clothes. I'd never grown up. But so I turned my back on God, and that was it. I just turned my back. And for the next 40 years, and I became one of those people that liked to argue with people about it. But in that moment, standing there at my chicken coop, something changed. And it's changed my whole life. It's been a constant part of my sobriety. I can't imagine my sobriety without God in my life. And I'm very grateful also that, let me get a drink of water over here. Thought I'd take it up there. Anyway, so I did that third step and went through all the steps and took it very seriously. Like I say, it was a wonderful experience. It's something that taught me that when I work with others to try to do it the way I was done with me. I remember when we were doing that fourth step, the fifth step. I remember Don and I were sitting there in that room, and we did everything. We cried. We laughed. We had all kinds of experiences that, and I realized it's the first time I'd ever been truly honest with somebody and willing to share everything. And I realized that was because I had a power greater than myself. Because up until that point, I pretty much didn't see what the fourth step had to do with me. I just thought I was a pretty good guy that drank too much. And never realized how self-centered I was, how egotistical. And as they say there, and childish, emotionally sensitive, and grandiose, and that was me to a T. But I'm so grateful that Don came into my life. And during that period, like I say, going through the steps and really becoming a seeker, and I started really trying to read everything I could about anything about spirituality. Because I found something, like they say, the mother lode. I hit the mother lode. And I was just amazed at how much my life had changed. Just a simple thing of coming to believe the power greater than myself was going to restore me to sanity. And through that process, I learned how to be of service, which is something I never considered doing too much of. I mean, I'd give you a hand if pretty much with the idea that you're going to give me a hand and when I needed it. And hopefully you'll give me more of a hand than I gave you. And, so that was my attitude. And I never even, like I say, that fourth step changed everything. I never even taken the time to really look at myself. And the process of going through that fourth step is something truly unique for me. I learned how to take an inventory. I learned how today when I'm disturbed about anything, I can take a look at it and truly do an inventory about it and look at my part in it, which for me is just something entirely new. Through this process of being of service, like I say, I've sponsored quite a few people. I've never counted all of them, but been quite a few. Only about four or five of them actually made it through, but every one of them was gave me something to that I learned about myself, the process of being honest with another human being. Because when I came in here, I just thought I was going to do it sober and everything was going to be great. And I learned what the problem had been. I didn't have any kind of thing to fall back on. Alcohol had always been my solution for every problem. And so when I don't have my solution, I didn't know how to deal with life on life's terms. I had no idea, because every time something would come up, I would turn to drink or drugs or whatever and start blaming everybody else. And that's just the way I did things. But learning how to inventory and taking a look at myself has just been so eye-opening. It's been quite an experience. Like I say, I got here at 63 years of age, and I thought I knew pretty much everything. I was self-reliant, had my own business, had a comfortable life. I was pretty comfortable, except that emotionally speaking, because I always felt like I wasn't quite enough. And so I wanted to work twice as hard to prove that I was. Failed to mention that, like I say, I was born with something called optic atrophy. So I've had poor vision all my life. And that was another thing that alcohol really made me feel equal. Because when I was drunk, it didn't make any difference whether I could see or not. It didn't make any difference. I just had poor vision, let's put it this way. I couldn't be corrected above 20/40. And I pretty well stayed sober for quite a while. In the last 5 years or so, vision has gone down to where now I'm legally blind. That's why I have to ask for a ride. And there again, I'm so grateful that when I had the opportunity to go to a lot of meetings and meet a lot of people, and I took advantage of that. And it's taught me that take advantage of what you got today, because you might not have it tomorrow. And that's something that I've tried to hold on to, especially when it comes to my sobriety. Because life is wonderful. But I also realize that why it is wonderful is because I do those same things that I was taught to do when I first came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I say, Don gave me a prayer to read when we first got together. And of course I said, I don't believe in that crap. And he says, that's all right, just read it. Read it every morning. You need spirituality in your life. And I wanted to please him, so I did it. Because if I didn't, when I'd call him every day, I'd call him every morning. And he never told me to do that, but the counselor at this outpatient treatment program I was going to told me to call your sponsor every day and be sure to ask him how he's doing today. Don't start right in with all your problems. And so I called him every day, and he'd ask me, did you read your prayer this morning? And so I got tired of saying no, so I started reading the prayer. And because of that early direction to do that 11th step, even before, a long time before we got to it, it's something that I can't imagine starting my day without doing that. I'm retired now, so I have the time to devote to that. It's usually well over an hour for me. I have about 6 readings I do. I do some prayer. I have a meditation I do every morning. And then I do some yoga, and my day starts off really well. And like I say, that's so honed in me, and something that's so habitual now that if I got something to do early in the morning, like a doctor's appointment or something, I'll just set my alarm an hour early so I can get up and have time to do this. That's how important it's become. And all that was started out by simply giving me a prayer to read that I didn't want to read. But this thing has been quite a journey. I'm still on it. I still attend meetings, at least 4 meetings usually. I'm on a routine. We have 5 meetings there at Westminster. 2 of them I started, and we have 3 others, 2 different home groups that meet there. So I attend all those meetings because I can drive in the daytime, so I'm 5 minutes away from there. So I go to 3 meetings a week that I drive to in the daytime, and then I get rides for the other two. But this whole thing, I truly believe that I have to continue doing exactly what I did when I first got here. That the idea that somehow if I do a little bit in the beginning, then I can skate. At least, it's been my experience, and I can only say it's my experience, that anybody that's tried that has usually ended up falling short. And so like I say, service, that's something that I never thought, well, you've heard what I had to say about it, but just something I'd never considered. But there again, it's changed my life to do something for somebody else. The rewards are great. It's kind of like doing that ninth step when you make amends to somebody. And I'm the one that gets all the reward from it. I'm the one that gets to have a clean slate and get the ground glass out of me. And so all these things that I just thought was foolish. I truly thought it was foolish when I got here. All the stuff you people were talking about. God and doing steps and changing your life. And it turns out that was the answer. That I just did not know how to live life on life's terms. One thing that's, like I say, been really important with me is sponsorship. And I've made some lifelong friends through that sponsorship thing. People that I didn't really have anything in common with, would not have mixed with. People from totally different walks of life, different ethnic backgrounds, different everything, and truly learn to love people. And that's something I never thought I would be able to do. Because in reality, I just did not trust people. I thought I did, but I didn't trust anybody. And to learn how to trust somebody, to go to business meetings and have disagreements about what's going to happen, and hold hands at the end of that meeting and hug after the meeting's over and not have any kind of issues. These are things that I just never thought would be a part of my life. I just couldn't imagine that I would put on a coat and tie and come out on a hot summer night to share my experience, strength, and hope with people. That just wasn't in my wheelhouse. I'm still not crazy about public speaking, but I never say no. And sometimes my speaking is very disjointed because I try to come in here with no agenda. The only thing I practice is saying, my name's John, I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date. And I trust that God's going to help me get through whatever I got to get through, to do whatever I need to do. And hopefully somebody will pick something up that will help them. Like I say, this struggle with God, I think it's... if I hadn't have gone through that, I wouldn't have been able to help some people that I've helped. I would have been impatient, because that's my nature. But because I had such a struggle with it, so the sponsees that I run into that struggle with this higher power thing, I can help them. I can't make them believe, but I can help them. And I'm very grateful for that, that I had that opportunity to be of service to other people. Got a lot of good war stories, but they're not good for mixed companies, so I'm not going to share any of those. But I will say, like I say, if I'd have had any idea of what this was going to do for me, this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have come in 10 or 20 years earlier. But I truly believe that I came in when I needed it and when I wanted it. Because like I say, I truly wanted this thing. And that's what made it work for me. That's been my experience, that I've never been able to get anybody sober, never been able to get anybody drunk. That's up to them. All I can do is tell you, anybody I work with, what worked for me. And I'm just so grateful for that. I have no idea what time it is, but...
40 after. You've got
840. Okay. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Anyway, I know I've got a lot more to say. But as I've said many times, I keep saying it over and over, I sold this thing short. And I sold myself short. That was the big thing. Like I say, that alcohol, when I drank it, it made me 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And that's what I clung to for a number of years. Until the end, it turned on me and it became my worst enemy. It became blackouts, a lot of blackouts, to the point that I was afraid to go out. I didn't want to get a DUI. So I'd go out in my shed, call it my shed, it was my shop, and I'd take my half gallon of wild turkey out there and a bucket full of ice. And thinking and drinking, figuring out how I was going to get straight with everybody and get even with everybody and get my wife straightened out. Say I came in here on the verge of another divorce. The marriage was pretty rough. Like I say, she called the police on me twice and said she was pretty fed up with me. I was fed up with her. And turns out the only things changed about that marriage was me. She's still the same person she was. We have a wonderful relationship today because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to bite my tongue, not say everything I think I should say. I've learned that it's more important to be happy than right, and so as a result of that, we have a wonderful relationship. She always asks me, did I have a good meeting? She'll ask me all about what I spoke about tonight. I'll tell her I rambled for 40 minutes. like I say, this has just been a miracle. I truly consider myself a miracle. I wouldn't have believed in miracles when I came here. I've witnessed miracles. I've seen people that were really had a messed up life going on and straightened out. I've also seen people that didn't make it and died. Several people. The longer you're in this program, the more that you'll witness that. People that just don't make it. And that's why I consider myself a miracle, that somehow I made it. And I owe that all to God. And I'm very grateful. And with that, thanks for listening to me.
Thanks, John. You want to do 5 minutes on step 7?
Sure.
Thanks, Jay.